Now. How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
The American Legion. We're a powerful force for the nation. We pledge ourselves to our veterans, our youth, a strong national defense, and Americanism. These four pillars shape our work and what we do for America. We work relentlessly within our four pillars of service, and we succeed. Go to legion.org to find out more about the American Legion's commitment of service to America.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov. Brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, joined by my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America. And we have got a great lineup of guests for you today, including Margaret Dunning, the principal of Widmeyer Communications, Robert Jenkins, president of Jenkins Security Consultants, Terrence Jones. Terrence is the president and CEO of Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts, and also Albert Perry, president and CEO of Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, KPL. Let's begin by introducing you to our first guest, Margaret Dunning, principal of Widmeyer Communications. Margaret, what is Widmeyer Communications?
Widmeyer Communications is a Washington, D.C.-based public relations, public affairs firm with an office in New York City. We employ about 50 people. We focus on communication expertise for corporate America, for nonprofits, from foundations to trade associations. And we do some work in the government realm, primarily federal government.
Does this mean that you help companies sell more product, or is it something different?
No, we don't sell product. We help a company that might have an issue. I'm looking at the water bottles on the table here, and they might have water issues either in the U.S. or internationally, and we would help them deal with the public affairs side of that. So where government might have anxiety, we're helping them out.
What are some of the issues that your firm's worked on?
We work extensively in education, K-12 through higher ed. We work in energy, climate, environment, health and wellness, transportation, and the like.
Okay. How big is, big or small is Widmeyer Communications?
As I mentioned, we're about 50 people. The majority, I'd say we're 30-something in D.C. and the rest in New York.
Okay. And how long have you been doing this?
I have been there about a dozen years now.
Okay. And why you?
Well, I had never worked in for an agency before, so didn't know the world of billable hours and client service. I had worked on Capitol Hill and in the White House and in television, and got to know Scott Widmeyer, who's the founder and chairman of the firm, when I was working in New York, and he invited me to join the company.
It wasn't quite that simple for Scott, though, was it?
Well, he initially invited me to start their New York office, but my husband was in Washington and I was commuting, and so my interest was not in staying in New York for a more extensive period of time. And so Scott approached me a couple of other times, and finally the right opportunity emerged from that.
So how many times did it take Scott to ask before you said yes?
Three. It was three times.
So
three's the charm.
What did Scott see in you, besides your employment history and all of that? What did he see in you that made him say, I can't give up on her?
We all like to think we're the most special, of course. I think it was, I had a really good sense for, policy issues. I had done a lot of work in education. I knew, how to connect the dots. I look at myself as a very strong connector, a la Malcolm Gladwell and the Tipping Point, a connector reference. And I think Scott saw that I could move public policy forward by bringing disparate parties together.
When you say connecting the dots, what do you mean by that?
It's actually very commonsensical. It is looking at a problem and thinking who should be involved in the equation. Often looking for parties that don't normally get along with each other, but they might agree with each other on a particular issue to move it forward.
Margaret, is there anything in your family background that might have helped you get to this point?
I can't exactly say. I'm the youngest of four children. I think it's survival mode when you're petite and you're the youngest. And so I think you learned quickly how to put things together in order to get what you wanted.
What was your father's vision for you growing up?
My father was a very, very strict, very Catholic physician. His vision for his daughters, and I have an older sister as well as two older brothers, was that the women in the family would be married and have children because marriage was for the propagation of the faith. And so I think his expectations for my sister and I were that we would have as many children as we could possibly have, be married at a young age, and that was his goal.
Well, how did you feel about that vision growing up?
I don't know that I really thought about it. We were not a career-driven household for women. My mother was stay-at-home, and I don't know. I knew that I was going to go to college to get an education, but I really didn't think about having a career. I went to Trinity College here in Washington, D.C., which is the oldest Catholic women's college in the country, and it has amazing career women graduates like Nancy Pelosi and Kathleen Sebelius, who's our Secretary of HHS, and Kathleen Black, who was the head of Hearst for years. And so there was clearly something in the water at Trinity that inspired women to go on to a career, but it was not something I had given a lot of thought to until I graduated and realized I needed a job.
What was the purpose of going to college then if you didn't think you were going to have a career?
Education. I think we all should desire education for the thirst for knowledge until we can't do it any longer.
So when did college become something different for you?
Being exposed to amazing Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur, who were our educators, and they were unbelievably impressive, and being with other really ambitious women in my class and in classes either before me or behind me, and it made me realize there was a world of possibilities out there. I just was a little late to it.
Given that most of our listeners have probably not been educated by sisters or monks or clergy, tell us what that's like.
Oh, there it has its good and its bad. I did K through 16 of Catholic education. In my earlier years, they were very strict disciplinarians. So the jokes that are made about nuns with rulers slapping your knuckles was real. That was not made up. But their goal was they had ambition for you. And but at Trinity, the sisters were one of the first sisters who did not wear habits. They wore little crosses on their clothes, and they were really academics, married to Christ in the language of the church, but truly academics in their heart. So they were extraordinary. They were not all. Some were challenging, but they were really committed to the furtherment of women's minds. And Trinity, remember, it had its heyday prior to men's Catholic colleges going co-ed. So Trinity had, they were the first Catholic women's college to have Phi Beta Kappa, and it was a different type of education for women.
At what point did you say to yourself and drew the conclusion, I'm going to have a career?
When I graduated and I needed to earn my own living, it was not as though I was going to have an endowment or a trust fund to carry me through. So I going to school in Washington, D.C. or New York City or any major environment allows you incredible internship opportunities, and I took advantage of those. And my senior year, I was an intern at the Republican National Committee and was able to turn that into a first job, and that was the year of a presidential election. So it was the Jerry Ford, Jimmy Carter campaign, and so my experience at Trinity and in Washington allowed me to transition to that.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that in just a moment, but what I really want to know is, when did you stop thinking, I'm working and this is a job, and you said to yourself, I'm going to have a career? Because those are really two different things.
I think it was, I was actually a late bloomer. I think it was more in my late 20s, early 30s, when I realized how good I was at communications and so could see that I could make a career out of that.
How did you realize you were so good?
Compliments from bosses. I remember I worked for John McLaughlin, who some may remember. He's of the McLaughlin Group, and we there was a crisis a minute in his environment, and I used to have to deal unexpectedly with the media, and I remember he said to me that I was just incredibly gifted with that, and so I knew that I could do that for a living.
Did it take you a while to become convinced that you were really good at this and this was your career, or did it, you know, all of a sudden, boom, you had this revelation?
Anyone who is raised in a Catholic household knows that you never immediately think you're good at anything. It's the Catholic girl syndrome of insecurity, and so it took me a while. I still have doubts. I mean, I think we all should have a healthy dose of self-doubt so that hubris doesn't encroach our daily environment.
Is your father aware of your success as a career woman and as a businesswoman?
No, he died a number of years ago. He was 70, so he does not know.
If he were alive and he could see you now, what do you think he would say?
I think he would be delighted, proud, but regretful that I didn't have a house full of children.
Yeah. Margaret, what is the website for Widmyer Communications?
It is www.widmyer.com.
Thanks, Margaret. We've been speaking with Margaret Dunning. Margaret's the principal of Widmyer Communications. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping structure the interview. Don't forget to check out our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back after this important business spotlight. Hi, I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Catherine Ryan.
Catherine, who are you with?
I'm with the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce.
And what is the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce?
We are Northern Virginia's premier membership and advocacy association specializing in government contracting.
Now, you've got something really big about to happen, and that's what you're here to talk about.
We do. We have exciting news. April 1st is the opening of the 9th Annual Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards application process.
And what is that?
The awards is a celebration of the achievements in the government contracting industry. It celebrates not only companies, but also the executives in the industry.
And you've been doing that for 9 years?
For 9 years now.
Okay, and what starts tomorrow?
Tomorrow starts the application process, the call for nominations to nominate both companies and executives for their achievements in the industry.
Okay, so what type of companies would be eligible to be nominated?
Really any company. We recognize companies for their revenue growth, industry achievements, their corporate social responsibility. So if there's a company that you work with or you know, we encourage people to get on our website and nominate a company.
Why is this so exciting to you?
I think it's exciting because it's an opportunity for us to celebrate all that government contractors do for the country, for our greater Washington area. There's really so much to be excited about and be proud of what the industry does for this country and for our area.
Okay. If someone wanted to nominate a company, there's a website I'm assuming that they would go to. What's the web address?
The web address is govconawards.com.
Okay, give us that one more time.
Once again, it's govconawards.com.
We've been speaking with Catherine Ryan of the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America, and it is our pleasure to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Robert Jenkins. Robert is the president of Jenkins Security Consultants. Welcome, Robert. What is Jenkins Security Consultants?
Well, Jenkins Security Consultants is a full time, 24-hour day, 7-day a week security guard service.
And are there particular types of buildings or places in which your security guards are deployed?
Well, no. We work for commercial firm for states, and we work for the federal government.
Got it. And how big or small is Jenkins Security Consultants?
We are about 400 strong.
Okay. And the company was founded when?
1994.
And how did you get a job with them?
I started the company, uh-huh. I guess, through the back door.
What does that mean, through the back door? Sounds like there's a story here.
Well, I did a lot of training when I was on the police department, for the police department and for some of the government agencies in the District of Columbia. And I was the author of the Police Cadet Training Program for the Metropolitan Police Department, and I ran that program for about 4 years. And it sort of propelled me into a lot of other things. When I retired from the police department, I was asked about a year or two later to put together a training program to get people involved in the inner city into the green line for the metro system that was being built. And as a result of that, they liked the program, the way I put it together, and told me if I started a company, I could go on and continue with this. And the company evolved into a security company.
So they didn't tell you what kind of company to start. They just had enough faith in you to say, start a company, and you drew it up from scratch.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back for a moment. What is it about you that made you such a good trainer and developer of training programs?
Well, I don't know. I was one of those guys, when I was given an assignment, I didn't gripe or moan and groan. I just took it. And it caused me to be able to learn a lot of things about what was going on around me. I learned a lot of things about how the police department worked, and I learned a lot about the difference between supervision and managing. You manage paperwork, you supervise people, getting certain concepts down and how to make things happen, building teams, getting people to do things, being able to delegate stuff and get people to work with each other to accomplish tasks. And I became pretty good at it.
Yeah. What did you enjoy most about being a police officer?
Being able to help people. That was one of the big things.
How so?
Well, a lot of times it wasn't about locking up the bad guys all the time. A lot of times you end up finding a missing kid, rescuing someone who got stuck. A little kid get his head stuck between the railings in his house, and no one can figure out how to get his head out. He got his head in, but he couldn't pull it out. Little crazy things like that. I had a house that caught on fire, and a senior citizen was stuck upstairs, and my partner and I went in. We got well singed. Wow. And we ended up on the back part of the house with her in a bed that we had to pull out. And then my partner and I, she told us, well, I have some money that was under my bed. It was all my life savings and all of it. And stupid me and my partner, right back in to get her money. We found out later it wasn't necessary. If you get the money after it's burned, the treasury had a way of being able to figure out how much it was and give them the money to fix it up. But, you know.
So you went from being police officer to a developer of training programs,
yes,
to the founder of a security company.
Yes.
Tell us what you were really trying to accomplish by starting the security company.
Well, when I started the security company, it was just an idea of training people to be able to work inside of a system that they had going already. That was that construction sites and all for Metro. But this, it evolved. It just evolved. I got stuck in this thing where I got these employees that's going. It started off with four or five employees and a large training class, and all of a sudden it's 35 employees, and it kept growing. And here I am trying to find resources, put together money to pay, make payrolls, and I realized that you got a thing called a 941 that has to be taken care of. That's the IRS taxes. And, man, it became really a, but, you know, one step at a time.
Yes. Robert, you mentioned a lot of what you've done has been about helping people, and I know it's to some point this program was about helping people as well. Was there anything in your childhood or the way you were brought up that was a catalyst for you to start taking this attitude towards people?
Well, I don't know. I know my mother worked at one of the, I guess, juvenile delinquent homes, and I guess working there was one of those things that sort of you remember those things that kind of stick with you a little bit. And as you grow older and you things keep going, I guess you revert back to those things about helping people and doing things for people. It kind of keeps going. I think that was the thing got me involved in the police department.
Mm-hmm. How about your dad? What sort of influence did he have on you?
Well, my dad was not there. He ended up out of the household, I guess, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, so my mother raised my sister and I.
What was that like on your mom?
Very difficult, but we didn't know it as children. We didn't realize until years later why the worst beating you could get is when you forgot to change clothes after you got out of school. You had your school clothes, your after-school clothes, and, of course, that Sunday go-to-church one suit.
Yeah. So life was good growing up,
yes,
despite the challenges?
Well, there were a lot of challenges, but as a kid, the parents sort of shield you away from those things. So you didn't realize how bad it was. But there was no such thing as designer jeans.
Got it. You know, in the green room, you said that you're good at putting things together.
Yes.
Tell us what that means, and then tell us, were you doing that as a child?
Yes. My mother had to work, and so I had to make sure that things worked at the house. When she was working, you know, like cooking, I learned how to cook at 12, and, you know, you have to wash dishes, and when mom comes home, everything had better be right. And she was a very hard person. She was the matriarch, and she was no nonsense.
Yeah. You said that your mom was part of the driving force behind you joining the police department.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think the fact that she always made sure that I understood the difference between right and wrong. You know, I could not bring a bicycle to my house and she didn't buy it. It just wasn't going to work. I mean, if I couldn't explain it, it better not be there. I mean, that's just the way she was, you know. So I grew up with that understanding, you know, you do it right, and there was no room for not doing it right. And it just wasn't acceptable.
Yeah. Tell us about playing music.
Yes. Well, I got a trumpet at about, I think I was around 12 years old, and I kept the whole neighborhood pissed off because of the fact that I was practicing all the time, but I ended up pretty good, and I played music for a long time until I ended up in the Army, and then when I came back, I played some more, but once I got into the police thing, man, it all ended. But I would have friends visit. I have Dr. John and the Allman Brothers and all these guys.
Wow.
I knew these guys. We had played together over the years.
How did you know those guys?
We played music together. We played.
You must have been quite good.
I was out there for a minute. But, you know, these kind of entertainment, it's a cycle. You go through this stuff. In life, you meet all kind of people. It's amazing the people you meet in your lifetime, what you do, you know. But a lot of these guys, when they come through town to play and all, you know, they couldn't believe that, hey, are you police? You really the police? Because the whole environment is totally different. totally 100% different.
I'm sure it is. So what was the highlight of your musical career?
Well, I think the highlight of my career was one night when we played with a guy called Joe Simon, a very popular black singer. And I just couldn't believe that we had reached that height. It was our band had traveled mostly Florida, Georgia, Louisiana. We call that the Chitlin Circuit, you know.
Yes.
And you know, we were the house band for one of the on the beach for one of the restaurants there, and pretty popular at the time. I thought we were big time, but it's so competitive, and there's really no real future. It's not so.
Yeah. You know, we have just a few seconds left, but I want to make sure we come back to something. You talked about no future there. The security company that you founded, that was really founded to give people who didn't have employment a future and a job. Isn't that right?
Yes, right.
Can you spend just a few seconds telling us a little bit about that?
Well, what happened was we started off with just training people, getting them prepared, how to basic first aid, CPR, how to patrol, and these kind of things. And all of a sudden, I went from zero to about a $21 million a year company.
That is incredible. Robert, give us the website address, please.
It's JenkinsSecurityConsultants.com.
Give us that one more time, please.
JenkinsSecurityConsultants.com.
Thank you, Robert. We've been speaking with Robert Jenkins. Robert is the president of Jenkins Security Consultants. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America. This is your host, Mike Mannion. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back after this important business spotlight. Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Arlen Feldman.
Arlen, who are you with?
I am the marketing manager of Washington Management Group and Fed Sources.
Two companies. Tell us about that.
Yes, sir. Washington Management Group provides GSA schedule consulting, and they are the parent company to Fed Sources, which is the leading market intelligence service provider.
Well, what is market intelligence services?
If you need to buy or sell to the federal government, we can help you do that. We help you succeed in the federal government.
Well, why is that important work that you do?
You know, it's very important in this industry because, obviously, with constricting budgets and people needing to use their time and energy effectively, we can help them provide that kind of service when they need to know more information about the specific opportunity or where they should, you know, approach the government next. We can help them with that sort of intelligence and insight in the industry.
Now, why are you better than anybody else at doing this?
You know, we like to say that our service is really what makes us different. We provide a service to our clients, and they know they can call us with whatever questions they might have. We don't just give them a login to a database and say, okay, you're on your own. You know, we really have their back, and we really help them decide and help make these tough decisions and really help them grow and really tailor where they need to go with some of their time.
You in particular, Arlen, what do you love most about doing this?
You know, I love the company. I love being able to say that I work for an honest corporation. You know, I really admire some of the senior managers that I work with. I think they have a fabulous story in the government industry, and I like to know that I'm working with a great group of people that are helping a variety of people in this industry succeed.
In just a few words, what's a great company for you to work with?
We have a lot of partners, the Coalition for Government Procurement. They're a wonderful organization. You should check them out, too.
And give us your website, please, Arlen.
All right. WashMG and FedSources.com.
Thank you very much. That was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America. And it is our pleasure to introduce to you our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Terrence Jones. Terry is the president and CEO of Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts. Welcome, Terry. And what is Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts?
Hey, well, it's good to be here. Wolf Trap is a private-public partnership between the Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts and Wolf Trap National Park for the Performing Arts. Now, Wolf Trap National Park for the Performing Arts is the only national park dedicated to the arts, and so it's this amazing relationship between a federal agency, the National Park Service, and a private not-for-profit 501c3 foundation.
Yeah, very interesting. I didn't know that until we first spoke. How many guests come through Wolf Trap each year?
They're usually 500,000 or so each year.
Okay, and by whatever metrics you like to use, how big or small is Wolf Trap in terms of the business?
Oh, well, budgetarily, we're about a $30 million business. We have 80 full-time staff and probably 400 part-time staff during the year.
How long have you been there?
I've been there 15 years.
And what precipitated you joining Wolf Trap?
Well, I was sought out. They were doing a national search for the CEO position at Wolf Trap, a firm out of New York. They developed their short list, however they do that magical stuff, and I was on it. They called me. I began interviewing in New York and then was interviewed down here at Wolf Trap by the search committee of the board, and a few weeks or months, I don't recall which now, they decided I was the right person for the job.
Yeah. What does it take to be good at this job for Wolf Trap?
Well, I think it takes a couple of things. One, it takes some real passion about the arts, about what you do, and how you go about it. In other words, we're a mission-driven organization, and our mission is service through arts and education. And so you have to understand that and be passionate about that. If you're not, you're really the wrong person. You can be a perfectly good business person, but if you don't have that sensitivity, you'll never get there.
How do you think you came up with that passion and that vision to run this so well as you do?
Well, it's been a part of my life from the beginning. My father was a World War II aviator, so I learned good discipline from him. My mother was a stay-at-home mom for the most part, but she had a love of the arts. She had actually always wanted to be a dancer, never achieved that, but always wanted. So as a result, my mom and dad in Kansas City, where I grew up, would take us to performances of theater in particular. They both loved musical theater, and they loved dance and so forth. And so we would go to those. And then very early on, first in the church, but then certainly in high school, I became very active in the theater, took leadership roles there. And as they say, the rest is history. I just kept doing it because I loved what I did. And I think I loved it because I knew it made a difference in people's lives. Hmm. You know, you could touch people through the arts in a way that you can't touch people in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Terrence, would you give us the mission statement again for Wolf Trap? You said something about service in arts and education. Can you?
Yeah, that's sort of an abbreviated. Basically, we're charged with presenting and producing high-quality performing arts for a diverse audience, and that's really what we're about, and to do education programs as a part of that.
Yeah, I really like how you said it earlier, service, arts, and education. In what way did your father, being an aviator in the military, give you a sense or appreciation of service?
Well, that was the greatest generation. I mean, it's hard not to look at people who served the way they did during World War II and after and not appreciate what they gave up. Fortunately, for my sake, he came back. Some did not. But you had that sense of service, and my mother did too. I mean, they were strong religious people. They were very active in their church. And so service was a part of what we did. It was just a given. And so I grew up with that mentality, and it was just natural that I would do that in some form when I went through college and ended up where I did.
So it sounds like you got service from both your mom and your dad. Why did you sort of follow your mom's channel for service as opposed to joining the military and follow your dad?
I don't think my dad really wanted me to join the military. It was some pretty challenging times by the time I got out of college. But I think it was back to this passion. It's about what I was passionate about. And my parents both wanted me to do what I wanted to do and what I felt strongly about. And it was very clear that they felt that I did feel strongly about that. I was passionate about the arts. I mean, honestly, my dad didn't want me to major in art or theater when I went to college. So out of deference to him, since he was paying for the first degree, I actually declared a major of political science. And there's actually more connection between theater and political science than you know. But ironically, I had a roommate who was a theater major who invited me to one of his rehearsals of Oliver. He was playing the Artful Dodger, and it was one of those aha moments where, it's like, this is, I'm interested in political science, but this is where my passion lies. This is what I care about.
So what did you do once you realized that?
Well, I went home at Thanksgiving and told him I was changing my major from political science to theater, and
The only stipulation they put on at that point was they wanted to make sure I got a degree in education so I could teach and have something to support myself if nothing else worked out. Obviously, it's worked out and worked out rather well. And they were very proud of my career path and enjoyed it as well.
So you get your degree. What was your vision? How did you intend to express this passion for the arts?
Well, I think it goes back to service. I think my real intent, because I sort of never stopped going to school, I had three degrees, and I love teaching. I love giving back through teaching and conveying knowledge that I have gained to students. And so I did that actively, even though I was presenting the arts early in my career. I was still teaching up until the time I took the position here at Wolf Trap, teaching full-time. And so I love that. We have a wonderful internship program at Wolf Trap, and we have about 50 or 60 total interns throughout the year, most of them in the summer, about 30 of them in the summer. And so in a sense, I still have the ability to do that. And I have an open-door policy, so students can come in, talk to me about the profession, about my career path and how that happened. And so I kind of have the best things. But I think it was, again, back to that service. I wanted to give back. And originally it was about doing it through teaching the arts. Later, because I have a lot of good business skills, there was a natural migration, I think, to the business side because I found I could do more by successfully operating arts as a business and bringing more people to the arts than I could if I had just taught or if I had been a designer or an actor, whatever it may be.
Where did you learn your business skills?
I think through college. I mean, I think I had a very broad, wonderful education at the University of Kansas, which, helped me understand that as wonderful as the arts are, you do need to operate them as a business, otherwise they will fail. And it doesn't mean every artistic person has to be a business person, but there have to be people in the arts who understand that side of the arts and therefore can perpetuate it. And that's really what I do and what I find myself doing now.
Tell us about the single greatest time as it relates to the arts where you were moved the most. Whether you were performing or whether you were in the audience, but dealing with the arts.
Well, that's, I guess it's a combination. First of all, Wolf Trap being an open-air facility, and I, as CEO, I walk around the plaza. I do sit for some shows at some mm-hmm. times, but I'm often up walking around watching not only the performance but also the audience. Mm-hmm. So one very memorable moment was the first year we presented Riverdance, the musical performance at Wolf Trap, and we were there from the beginning with Riverdance in this country. And there's a scene in Riverdance where the moon rises on the stage, and there's this very moving Irish music and dance that's happening at that time. But at the same time, exactly at the same time, a full moon was rising above the Feline Center. So it was like not only did we have it perfectly staged on the stage, but you had it perfectly staged in nature, which I think is a great description of Wolf Trap, because here you have a national park with the Performing Arts Center in the middle. And so what could be better than to watch the – it really was, it would raise the hair on your neck. I mean, it's like, oh, my gosh, it's this perfect timing. And, it was a coincidence, but a beautiful one.
Same question, though, as it relates to business. You as the business person now, what's the single greatest business accomplishment at Wolf Trap that really moves you the most or makes you most satisfied?
Well, I think strategic planning specifically, because it's something I brought to Wolf Trap. They had not actively done strategic planning before I got there. It's something that I had learned in school and had used throughout my career. And therefore, we instigated that. And I think it's really helped Wolf Trap understand its direction for the future and has made it a healthier organization as a result. But I will say, I think it goes back further than that. I think that does go back to my father. I think it's that issue of discipline. I think a lot of my business skill, and my dad was a good businessman too, but a lot of it was just that sheer sense of discipline and that you always finished what you started. I mean, my dad would say, if you start it, you finish it. And, I think that's that's a core of my business training as it began, and then moving it on up into the actual skills that it takes to run a business.
In just a few words, what does your dad think of his son Terrence now?
Well, my dad was very proud of me, and he thinks I made the right decision going into the arts instead of going into political science.
Good for you. What is the website for Wolf Trapp Foundation for the Performing Arts?
It's www.wolftrapp.org.
Okay, give us one more time. Just give us that one more time.
It's www.wolftrapp.org.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Terrence Jones. Terrence is the president and CEO of Wolf Trapp Foundation for the Performing Arts. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, www.executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And we'll be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul from the Potomac Companies bringing you your business spotlight. Joining us today is
Adele Sears.
And Adele, what company are you with?
Epic Media Relations.
Epic Media Relations. That sounds big. What do you do?
We're a full-service boutique PR firm, and we like to say we offer PR, marketing, and a touch of magic for our clients.
Full-service PR boutique.
That's right.
Translate that.
Essentially, we focus on understanding people, what makes them believe in a brand, an organization, a product. For example, we know that through studies, women are more likely to influence other women, and men are more likely to influence other men, but through nonverbal communication. So men like emails, and women like person-to-person conversations.
Interesting. So you use that to help a company with their marketing strategies?
Pretty much. We understand people, and therefore we understand how to get in front of the right people, influence stakeholders, garner visibility, and build brands.
So who would be a typical client for you? What
well,
type of people,
it could
companies?
Be anywhere from DuPont, who's trying to increase the visibility for DuPont Corian, which is a countertop offering that they have.
And the women influence that one in the kitchen.
Right, exactly. So a consumer-based business like that. We also have a nonprofit organization that works with interns. And they were looking to become the go-to source for interns in Washington, D.C. And so we created an intern appreciation week, and we got called Interns Rock. And we had MTV and area business development organizations, museums, restaurants offer discounts to interns for a week, and it was hugely successful.
Sounds like a fun place to work. What's the website? How do people reach you?
www.epicmediarelations.com.
Epicmediarelations.com.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Has been Paul Smith. It is Paul Smith with the Potomac Companies with your business spotlight. Have a great day.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion. I'm joined by my co-host, David Cooper of the Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce you to our next guest. Our next guest is a gentleman named Albert Perry. Albert is the president and CEO of Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, KPL. Welcome, Albert, and tell us, what is Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, KPL?
Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, short KPL, is a global biotech company, life science company, that develops, markets, and manufactures products that are used in biomedical research, life science research, and as well as some of the products are used in diagnostic products.
Okay. That sounds very complex to the average person like me. In what way would my life touch what you do?
Generally, our products are used, as I said, in research in the university, either university setting or other pharmaceutical companies. And they're generally studying various activity within the cell, normal, abnormal cells, to understand what's going on. And then in a diagnostic setting, more common things that our are used in are testing, like testing for salmonella or infectious disease, E. coli in food samples, or pregnancy tests where you can visualize things. So we really make components, and if you look at it in a broader sense, we are just like a chip in a computer. So we make the chips in a computer, and these are more biological products.
Yes. The company is how big or how small?
We're about 45 people. We've been around since 1979.
Okay, and how did you convince them to give you a job?
Actually, I was a co-founder of the company and started the company with another gentleman, Dr. Kierkegaard, in 1979. We used to work in a company together, and we kind of came to the conclusion that we both wanted to start a company, and that's how the idea came through.
Why did you want to start a company?
Principally, I started in science as a bench scientist, and I was more interested in the business world and really having more relationship with people and developing products and getting those to applications. And that's really how my interest started. But generally is interest in people and taking science a step further.
So you are the unusual person that has science and business in the same brain.
I think that somehow it's true, but I think those kind of, maybe it's the way I grew up in the family setting where my family, parents, my dad and his siblings came from really people of business. And
tell us more about that.
Remembering some of the things that went on as really being part of his business, in a way, traveling to his clients and seeing how things are done and kind of evolving with that and developing that interest.
Well, I'd like to dig into that a little bit. Okay. Your father was a business owner.
He was.
And what type of business did he have?
He had an import-export business, and it was in Iran, and that was in the early 60s.
So you were living in Iran at the time?
Right.
And life was like what at that time?
It was a good time to be in Iran at that period. And then, of course, I came here to go to school, and I did my higher ed in the United States, and then I decided to stay here.
So, well, why did you decide to stay?
I think I just got my roots in here. That's really the way it happened. Eventually, my family came into the U.S. later.
And why did they do that?
Just because things evolved that way. You know, there was revolution in Iran and things. A lot of the friends and family moved, and they came as well. And really, the other thing I influenced, hopefully I had some influence in that, to have him come here.
Did the revolution personally affect your family, your parents, your siblings?
Well, I think to the extent that they had to leave, or that was part of the way things happened.
So you were here before they got here. To what degree did you help them assimilate into the United States?
I think they had more friends in the U.S., so that was not a problem. They had a lot of friends that were in Iran at that time.
Okay.
This was in 78, so, and a lot of the Tehranians, either went to Los Angeles, New mm-hmm. York. So that was not really the problem.
Got it.
And so
your father had an import-export business. He came to the United States.
Right.
And you had mentioned something about business trips, and you used to go on business trips with your father.
Right.
Tell us about that, what that meant to you as a young boy.
Actually, just thinking about it, it's been a long time, but it's just connecting to business people and seeing how the relation is built and what solution did he bring, and then really not only just in creating this situation but visiting after the client is his and seeing how things worked in there. So not only installing some of these large equipment that he was involved in, but to see how they worked and how well they were performing And then there was engineers coming from overseas to either install, fix, et cetera. So mm-hmm. really learning a lot of what goes on behind business. It's not just the sales or evolution of a product, but really how does a relationship affect and impact on the long term the outcome of a business.
To what degree did you want to be like your dad someday?
It's hard. I really don't know if conscientiously I thought about it, but it's probably something that is there and you don't really think about. And probably it's something that our kids probably grow up with, because at some point we are an example and try to influence our kids. And I'm sure I did. And really the outcome that I saw, my son is also in business for himself.
Well, we're going to come back to that for a moment. Well, right. We know where the business part of you came from, mm-hmm. At least in part. Right. Where did the love of science come from?
That's a good question. Actually, I always had interest in disease and solving problem in disease, especially infectious disease vaccines. So really, my initial study was in infectious disease.
Why?
Again, as I said, is really solving disease problems and just have that interest. What I would call passion for is how do we improve human life? And actually, if we look at our mission in our company, one of the part of our mission states that what we do will impact human life either through diagnostic or therapeutic. So that's what really what we do. Basically, KPL, we develop products but that help facilitate research, but really the impact of that research is to better understand and diagnose disease. And that's really what we
mm-hmm. Were there any instances in your childhood that you think influenced your passion for this type of science, aspect of science? Were there any family illnesses that you, anything like that?
I can't really think of that, but probably just seeing it in general.
So your son's in business?
Right.
Not your business?
No.
But he's founded his own business?
He's founded his own business,
right. Tell us just a little bit about that, and you have a big smile on your face right now, so you look like a proud papa. Tell us about that.
Basically, he has a business degree, and then he got involved in some sort of IT and software and application of software. He worked for several companies that were in that space, either application of software or business application, and he left and started a business where his company provides software and software application to universities.
Yeah. What do you think your dad would say about your success?
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Excellent. Albert, give us the website address.
www.kpl.com.
Okay. We've been speaking with Albert Perry. Albert is the president and CEO of Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, KPL. I'd like to thank all of our guests today. We've had a great lineup of guests, including Margaret Dunning, principal of Widmeyer Communications, Robert Jenkins, president of Jenkins Security Consultants, Terrence Jones, president and CEO of Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts, and of course, most recently, Albert Perry. Albert is the president and CEO of Kierkegaard and Perry Laboratories, KPL. I'd also like to thank my co-host, David Cooper of Bank of America, for helping develop our storyline, hopefully delivering to you, our listening audience, an entertaining and educational show. most of all, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have a radio show. So don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. That's www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Mike Manning, your host. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news.
This is a paid
news.
Commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on 1500.